Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, I'm Steph and this is the Don't Buy Her Flowers podcast. I wanted to start with a massive thank you. I've had so many messages about the last two episodes. The Dr. Karen Gurney episode on sex in long-term relationships and the Matt Frey episode on relationships and marriage. You may or may not know, but in 2014, before I started Don't Buy Her Flowers, I had a blog and I wrote honestly about motherhood and relationships and not really feeling like I knew what I was doing as a grown-up. And the response was really big at the time, with people saying, this is how I feel. And I just absolutely loved that human connection and the interaction that came off the back of that. And I've got a lot to thank that blog for, as it also gave me the confidence to leave my job and start Don't Buy Her Flowers. It was kind of realising that I could connect with people, and if they felt like me about lots of things, including motherhood and life and relationships, then the very idea behind Don't Buy Her Flowers about thoughtfulness and empathy rung true for others. I especially love that people have been sharing those two episodes with their partners. One of my favourite messages has been from someone who got married last year, and she found the relationships episode articulated things that they've been trying to get to themselves, her and her partner. And she said it was a huge relief, and that they spent their hour walk discussing the podcast, and it helped them kind of get through this muddled conversation. And I just love that they go for an hour walk as newlyweds. I think that is a good thing. Matt and Karen both talked about connections and rituals, so they're onto a good thing. But yeah, thank you. Keep the messages and sharing and reviews coming, and we'll work on bringing more fab episodes. And feel free to email me your suggestions to podcast@don'tbuyherflowers.com. This is the start of our fatherhood episodes leading into Father's Day, which is on the 19th of June. Come and look at our website for excellent gifts, don'tbuyherflowers.com, and you can pre-order now and we'll send it out closer to the 19th. And today's guest is Jonathan Kirkby. Jonathan became a dad via surrogacy with his husband around 18 months ago, and I think it's one of those things that we might feel like we know a bit about via celebrities or probably inaccurate information and little snippets here and there. So he talks through the whole process, and we also talk about whether he suffers with dad guilt and how they share the load at home. All really interesting. And we recorded this episode a few weeks ago, and actually Jonathan and his family are in America right now about to have their second baby, so wishing them loads of luck with that. And let's find out more. I want to say huge congratulations, because you're having another baby.
I must be mad.
So you're going to have two under 18 months, right?
That is correct.
That's exciting. So how long have you got to go?
We have 6 weeks left. So we are 34 weeks on Saturday. But we pretty much know the baby will come 2 weeks early. They seem to love that in America. They like to induce in America, which is quite controversial amongst us and my friends in the UK. But it seems like a real common thing to do. So I've kind of started to feel like it's about 6 weeks away, if not less.
That's exciting.
It is exciting. I'm starting to really get excited. Went through a real phase of feeling a bit just daunted by the whole fact of like, eek, we're going to be a family of four. And that whole, how are we going to travel ever again? Like, how do you carry two children through an airport and all their stuff? And you know, who takes the child. And so I'm just like, with this panic. Yeah. And now the excitement of having a newborn has kicked in.
I think that is so normal. Like, well, I definitely felt it between one and two. I was worried I was going to ruin the firstborn's life because they were really happy and you were quite happy. And then you're like, oh, God. But they will be fine. They'll be fine.
They will. Somebody said to me today, when you start seeing your child interact with your other child, it's yeah. such a beautiful thing to see. So I was like, yeah. oh, okay, that's positive.
Yeah, hold on to that bit. We had Em Smythe on the podcast and she talked all about adoption. And I had so many messages from people, especially who had been through the process, just saying it was so refreshing to hear people talk about it with someone who actually knows and who's been through it. And obviously their experience is individual, like your experience of surrogacy is individual. But there's so much misinformation, and that's why she really wanted to do it. And also then there's, I guess, like a fear because people don't know enough. So they find it a bit odd or unusual yeah. or whatever. And I think I understand from your posts and stuff that you have a passion to want for people to understand.
I love it. I think the more people talk about surrogacy, the more normal it becomes in any yeah. situation or setting. I've spoken to quite a few female, I would say friends or like contacts and journalists and people I know. And they're people mostly in their mid-40s who said, I had no idea about surrogacy. It makes me mad now when I'm thinking, why didn't you know that? So like the more that we discuss it, and my husband and I were very open books. People love to ask us questions. There is forever right. like, do you mind me asking this? And I'm like, no, ask more.
My eldest is 11 and I don't remember anything about surrogacy kind of when he was born, but my youngest is 4.5. And in his class and stuff, and actually my daughter's class as well, there are pairs of dads and pairs of mums, and some of them have done Fantastic. It through surrogacy. But it feels like it's really changing in the last few years.
Yeah, it's definitely picking up a lot more steam. And I think it's just becoming more accessible through routes of, you know, we went through a US route, but the whole UK surrogacy market is slowly opening up. There's a lot of kind of T's and C's around it. And I think more like Instagram with other gay dads who are speaking out and showing that they have children and they've gone through the journey. I think other people are like, oh, I could do that.
You said that your whole life, basically, you were told that you couldn't have babies. And then suddenly it was something that could happen.
For some reason, when I was younger, I always wanted to have a child. And I always been thinking, I don't know how that would be. I was kind of very traditional. I kind of grew up in a South Wales valley town. You know, I've got a mum and dad, lovely family. You did have a load of money, which is a really good family morals. Mm-hmm. And I always kind of wanted to try and replicate that to a certain extent. But then you throw in that I'm gay. And it's like, oh, how will I do that? And I used to say to people when I was 18, 21 at uni, like, I want to have children. And they always get really fascinated by the detail. It was like, will you adopt? And I was like, I don't know, actually. I don't know if adoption is for me. But I always remember quite clearly saying, when it gets to the point that I'd like to have a child and I'm at that point or phase in my life, things would have changed and moved on. And it was kind of like I was manifesting it when I now look back and thinking, I was just saying, I want something else. Adoption's not for me, but I would like to have children. But I don't know what that is. So hopefully something will change and happen. Yeah. For me, I guess going back to why I wanted a child was I always felt quite fortunate that I grew up with good morals and good family values. And then kind of when I went out to the wider world and I met a whole host of people from all walks of lives, you know, I kind of always thought, God, if you get rich, you just have loads of great things. And actually, when I kind of ventured to uni and met a whole host of people, it was like, for me, I look back at my family then and was like, thank you, actually, you gave me a lot of foundation blocks. And I kind of was thinking, if I can give that to one child in the world, then it makes my life a lot more meaningful.
That's lovely. But and then so what was the process? What was the first decision? How do you actually kick off?
Yeah, so it was about a 2.5 year process. And I think that was, we kind of finally got to the point of, oh, let's have a baby. And was like, my husband was like, yeah, let's do it. And I wasn't quite sure where he was at this point because we hadn't discussed it so long. And then we just said, okay, let's do some research. So the usual thing, you go to Google, we kind of Google surrogacy and we read quite a few online articles. And for us, it became quite apparent that the US was most likely going to be our route. So then our process was that we emailed several agencies. We had a few phone calls with them. We met one of them in London and we kind of narrowed it down to about two or three agencies. And we kind of looked at the fee structure and how they go about it, where they're based in America. So you find an agency in the US, the agency will then, they kind of give you a book, which is
the
basically,
menu.
a menu, and it felt really. I'm sure you've heard it. It's like human shopping. It was a little odd.
Adoption, I think, is quite similar from what Em said. But yeah, and that you feel a bit weird about it because you're looking at that point at babies, whereas I'm guessing you're looking at mothers.
We were looking at mothers, and it was just like, you know, so every night we were like, okay, right, profile 406. And it's really in depth. You click on it and you see Sharon, and it says 26, Harvard graduate, blue eyes. It'll say everything but their descent, their family. You click them further, you see the family history. And you kind of find your point, go, God, yeah, she's great. Yeah, she's lovely. Oh, gosh, her grandmother died of diabetes. Her dad died of a heart attack. Oh, and then you feel really bad on yourself. But once you kind of get over that and you realise, you know, it's part of a process, and, you know, this is, you're not exploiting somebody. It's somebody who has chosen, you know, very kindly to donate their eggs. So then we found our egg donor. We lost one egg donor because we found out she'd been to a Zika-prone area. So they had to remove her. We also done some kind of test, double check what kind of, if there was anything hereditary that we had, some random kind of like hereditary diseases that you wouldn't get matched with somebody who might have that in a bloodline, even like as random as it could be.
So
we got matched, and at the same time the agency is looking for a surrogate for you, and with the surrogate you kind of get given one. It's not like the egg donor, it's not like you have a whole book. I think there's less people who want to be a surrogate. So,
because there's different types of surrogates, isn't there? So there's some where you can use the egg from the mum, and there's some where you don't.
True.
What's the right language, by the way? Do you say mum or do you say surrogate? Or
so we use surrogate for our surrogate. Yep. The other word is carrier. So yes, we found our egg, and then we got, you know, we got a survey of all the questions about a surrogate, what we look for it. And those kind of things cover important things like religion, for example, ethnicities, just in case there's any kind of crazy kind of worries. We were very relaxed by it. But the same questions get asked to the surrogate. So we got matched to a surrogate. Admittedly, we got matched to one to start with, and we went on a 3-month journey with her. And we were about 3 weeks out from transferring an egg. And she'd already been a surrogate previously. And unfortunately, she had an anxiety attack over Christmas. Not to do with surrogacy, I believe, but a doctor basically ruled her out and just said, I think you need to take a step back. So that was a little bit of a fallback over that, that we found out that on Boxing Day.
So that's tough, right? Because there's controllables in all of this, but that's another person to factor in, I guess, of how they're doing in their emotions and their life and everything else. That's hard.
That's a really good question. And do you know what? That's the whole part of surrogacy, that you are out of control of somebody else. Like, you can't micromanage a surrogate, even though as much as you'd like to know lots and lots about it, they're in another country, they're in another relationship, another house. You know, and lots of people always say to me, you know, do you think your surrogate's drinking? And like, what kind of food is she eating? What do you think she's doing?
Go, I'm
like, I don't know.
It's not helpful. Yeah.
It's not. And, you know, I'm very good at just putting things, we're quite practically minded, and just being like, I've got to trust her. Like, you know, we chatted, we spoke, we agreed to go on this together. And I don't want to second guess her. I just want to believe in her and trust in her and what she's doing for us. So it was, the losing the first one was frustrating, I'd say. But I'm a believer in fate, and I think everything happens for a reason. And we then got matched with our carrier, Stephanie, a few months later. I think it was actually a better match. We've actually got very similar outlooks, and we're also very similar minded. We're still quite practically minded. Yeah, that was kind of finding it. That's, again, it was agency helped, and the agency helps you with legal pieces. So you can do surrogacy in all parts of the world. There's places like China and India and Spain. Ukraine used to be a very popular destination.
Yeah, I read that.
And of course, the UK. The main factor that pulled us to the US is that the legal paperwork that's done before the baby is born is watertight. So there's no ambiguity of whose baby is this ever going to be. In the US, it starts around about 23 weeks, where you start drawing up paperwork with the local courthouse. And as soon as your child is born in the US, as soon as it takes a breath, it's our responsibility. So mine and my husband's, we're on the paperwork. We go straight on to the birth certificate, where when you do it in the UK, there is no paperwork drawn up beforehand that I believe of. What happens in the UK is that agencies are very harder to manage in a UK perspective, because you can't do commercial surrogacy. So I could say to you, hey, Steph, would you like to have my baby? And you might say, yeah, I'd love to have your baby. And I can't say to you, can I give you X amount of money, 5, 10, 1,000, 100,000. That's illegal. What you can say is, I will give you expenses.
Yeah.
What you deem as expenses is very, your term of expenses is very different to Mariah Carey's term of expenses, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, it's not actually, so I'm very expensive. So that's, No, but that's, so that ambiguity again, which when you've got all these things that are out of your control, I can see why you would want to do something where you do feel slightly more in control, or that's more legal structure to it.
Yeah. The bigger thing at the end of the UK process, and I don't know so much about the European process, was that in the UK, when a baby is born via surrogate, even if it's not genetically her egg, the mum has the right, and I need to double check whether it's either 3 or 6 months, that carrier has the right to that child. So at birth or 2 weeks later after birth, carrier could turn around and say, oh, 1 second, no, that's my baby. I carried it for 9 months. I'm keeping that baby. And legally, dad or whatever the situation is, the partnership, they don't have a legal right to stand on. And there have been challenges, and it has happened in the UK. But that made me feel very nervous.
Yeah.
That was a bit that we both didn't feel very comfortable about. So, and also I think the child has to carry the mum's surname for that time period as well. So mum and her partner, husband, wife, sits on the birth certificate because they're legally the child's guardian until you take it to the courts. It didn't feel quite right for us, but I appreciate, I think the US is a more financial route to go down, where in the UK, it's much more, however you agree your expenses, then it's a fraction of the cost. My biggest aim really is that I hope that in a couple of years' time, if not sooner, we are able to have more surrogate agencies in the UK, and more people are doing it, because, you know, it's, our surrogate loves it. She has a great time.
Are there individuals doing it, or is it pretty much always through an agency?
Potentially. I haven't heard of that. I met one surrogate in the US that was doing it privately in her area, and she was doing it for friends or friends of friends. Again, that just made me a little bit nervous, because she was like, I'd be happy for you. But feeling out of control in so many other areas of a journey of surrogacy, it kind of felt like having that insurance policy of a legal document and an agency to help manage the situation should anything arise that you didn't feel comfortable with. Good for us.
And so then your carrier was pregnant.
Yeah.
And then you had the kind of wait. Did you spend quite a lot of time? Because this was all during COVID, right?
It was, yeah. Our carrier, or Stephanie, as you call her, really, was the last transfer in the hospital in Connecticut, just before they all closed down. She was an absolute trooper, Stephanie. Her flight got cancelled from the next day. So she literally like got her husband out of work. They turned the whole life around in like 6 hours, and literally got on a plane that day, a day earlier, flew to New York. They got to New York. The car hire company would completely close. The hotel had that closed down. They just like kept like, it was like roadblock everywhere they went. But they made it from Minneapolis, where they're based, to get to our fertility hospital in Connecticut. And it all just felt like our life was spinning out of control back, you know, in March.
And you were back here in the UK.
We were here in the UK,
The stress levels must have been absolutely... Well, it was stressful for everyone at that point in our lives, let alone that going on. That's so big.
It was a lot, yeah.
Yeah. Did you go back and forth, and did you see her when she was pregnant?
No, we had these lovely plans that we would go and see the first scan and be part of that journey and actually meet face to face. But the US was closed down for that whole period. So we'd done some Zooms. Obviously, WhatsApp is brilliant. So we just continually chatting and sharing. And we didn't meet until Wilder was born.
Didn't he come 4 weeks early or something?
He came 4 weeks early. There was lots of lockdowns happening around the UK. So I went to Mexico, because I'd hear that if you go to Mexico and you do 2 weeks in Mexico, I could walk straight into the US.
Right.
So I went to Mexico as a backup. Our visa was going through with the US embassy. But I just thought, let's just get out of the UK, because it was closing down again in the November. So I was having a lovely time in Mexico and, you know, cycling around Tulum. My husband Ian was working in the Middle East, and we got the call of my waters are broke. And we're like, what? And I was supposed to be leaving 2 days later to kind of go and fly and get our life together and like start really planning. The plan was to get to the US, buy everything in this 4 weeks. I was getting there 4 weeks early, really. And it was just that kind of like, I wouldn't change it for the world. Wilder was born via Zoom, which to me feels very 2020. I couldn't change any of it. And I now just kind of think it is what it is type thing. So.
No. And how did you feel? How did you feel when you saw him?
We didn't sleep all night on Zoom. We just kind of cried and just kind of watched him. And then when I got there, it just felt surreal. What was different for us is that we didn't have a pregnancy, and it was quite hard to try and find that. I think, you know, when you have maybe a traditional pregnancy, dare I say that, mum or whoever is carrying a baby and their partner is touching stomachs, feeling the growth, the kicking of legs and, you know, just preparing yourself. Yeah. If I'm honest, we spent 9 months in COVID. So we were mental. I was mental with work, which is pretty much like most of us all kind of got drunk at 5 o'clock in the evening and done quizzes. So we had this kind of like, it's COVID and we're about to have a baby. So our life we thought was going to be over. We just kind of had fun. So when he arrived, it kind of felt like this is the time to kind of, this was kind of our pregnancy. And we just nestled down and we went from all of this and you try and prepare yourself as much as you possibly can. And all of a sudden you've got a baby on you. And because while it was a month early, he had cables coming out of his head. He had about 9 cables coming out of him. So it was all a bit scary at the same time, but he just felt like the most precious bundle.
After that process, and like you say, 2.5 years and then all the different obstacles, that relief must have been massive.
It was. I think feeling out of control throughout the pregnancy was hard, but I had to trust, you know, the world or universe to a certain extent. But it was always still that nervousness. You know, every night I went to bed, I would count the weeks and be like, oh, right, we're 25 weeks. Babies can survive at this point. You know, so there was still that kind of like nervous energy of like, ah. So I think when I just saw him, it was just that the emotions just kind of broke.
Yeah. So, and then the three of you were just together for those 5 months.
We were. So we were in about 4.5 months. We spent a month in Minneapolis where he was born and we just waited for him. He was in NICU for a week. And then we just spent a couple of weeks kind of getting him up to his birth weight or his a bit more weight. And then we flew down to Miami and spent 4 months there. The UK was in lockdown again. So it was like, why are we going to go back to the cold? Equally, we had some passport issues that wouldn't have come up if it had been for COVID. The passport application got stuck in the kind of Midwest snow.
Right.
But it kind of became a nice kind of excuse, if I'm honest with you, because we couldn't leave. Yeah. And, you know, our visa started running out, but we had to keep extending them. And it was kind of like, well, I don't really want to go home because everybody's in lockdown and our families are just saying it's really miserable here. And Florida and Miami was, their restrictions were a lot lower. It was beautiful weather. And I wouldn't change it for the world. Like I said, it was like our pregnancy. It really cocooned us and it allowed us to work out who we were and what kind of relationship we was going to have with our child. And it was bliss. It was actually one of the best 5 months of my entire life. And I was so thankful and we just kind of just smiled every day and just kind of just like lapped him up. And I think it was wonderful for him because he just had 100% of both our time pretty much.
Yeah.
Just looking after him, smiling, caring for him.
What did you do for the 5 months that you were over there with work?
I was, well,
you run a communications agency, like with a team of how many?
18. There's 18 of us. And I was on a conference call 2 days later after Wilder was born, but that was just because it was needed and it was a real fun one. Because he was born in November, we went into Christmas period really, and Christmas was our kind of quieter time. January's pretty quiet. So we kind of had this first 2 months of like calmness. And because it was COVID and comms had some challenges as it was, it felt like it was quite an easier time to step out. Where right now we've just had our best month ever in 11 years. And
oh, man, amazing.
We're riding a real great wave. You know, the business is doing incredibly well and we're picking up some fantastic clients. So it's a real excitement moment in work at the moment. I'm absolutely loving being in work and just, you know, it's challenging me in a fantastic way. So there's a nervousness of like, how do I cut off from that? And I'm still trying. I'm still deliberating in my head, to be honest. I think, you know, in my head, I've got a month out. Hopefully, I'll still check emails daily, and I'll be reactive. I think it's more when I get back to London. How do I sit still?
And how do you divide it between the two of you?
We always said right from the start we'd be 50-50. And mm-hmm. there was no kind of, we didn't want to kind of recreate who's mum, who's dad, because I just think yeah. that it was
doesn't not... work anyway, to be honest.
So it was always 50-50 about everything we've done, whether that's work, life. But that's been very much our kind of direction in parenting, that both of us feel quite, you know, not one of it. We're both pulling our own weight. And we're always, without sounding selfish, is always trying to keep us happy, keeps Wilder happy. Because if I get frustrated, if I get frustrated and my life is like in chaos, it's chaos, then it means I don't spend quality time with him. And, you know, you know, I don't want to be short or shouting it.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you feel kind of that guilt, that dad guilt? Does that happen?
I don't. Do you know what? I was thinking this earlier. I don't have dad guilt at all. I love going to work, to be honest. Yeah. Going to work is easy. You know, the hard work starts when I get home or, you know, when we get to the weekend. So going to work, I kind of skip down the road. I'm like, I can do my job backwards.
Guilt is meant to tell you something when you've done something wrong. But actually, if you're enjoying your work and your kids are safe and everything's been thought about, you shouldn't have to feel guilty, but it's just I think it's an overhang from something.
Well, people just assume it. So they, you know, we had 3 days away, the first time in 17 months, we spent a day apart from Wilder. And people just continually ask you like, oh, do you feel guilty that you're away from him? Or are you really missing him? I'm like, no.
I'm it's actually glorious.
Not. He's having a great time with his grandparents. He's having a better time than what he might be at home. You know, he's having full attention from his grandparents, and it's important he has that relationship with them.
Well, and then you guys get to focus on your relationship, which if you want to stay together, you have to.
You really do. Going away, it was only 2 weeks ago, I felt like a human again. I was like, I haven't felt like this feeling for so long. It was like, I didn't have to think about snacks or poos or nappies or clothes or, you know, all like, oh, and even sleeping, I just slept. I didn't sleep with one ear open thinking, can I hear a cry? You know, we went to dinner, we made the most of it, and we just hung out. It was just like, this is what our life used to be. It was a little bit like, oh my God, I really like this.
Yes.
It was like,
shit, this is what this was. We did not appreciate it. Well, no, especially not because you're having another one.
I know. We just had that moment. We had that moment about 3 months ago when we kind of was like, shoot, I think we're having another baby. My husband just said, I don't think we really thought about having a baby, did we? Just a baby in general. And I was like, I think we did. Like, we didn't just go to the Wetherspoons on a Friday night and get knocked up and a baby just popped out 9 months later.
Yeah, you've had to think about it more than a lot of people.
We went through, you know, it was a good kind of like a year and a bit before we'd even like planted an egg, you know, and legals and costs and all that stuff. I was like, we thought about it more than ever. I think, what we realised, the comment came from, A, we're having another child and we've just come out of the kind of harder bit, bit where he's now 17 months and he's kind of becoming more of a human. I was like, shoot, we're going to go through all this again.
And also, I think that's, again, this having two is a whole other, because when there's one, the two of you can divide and conquer. So at least one person gets to sit down and eat, maybe if the others. And that, but again, I think it just changes as long as you kind of accept it. And once you've accepted it, it takes a little while. Then, yeah, it changes your setup a bit.
Yeah, the two bit is, I'm slow, like I said, I think I said at the start, it's slightly daunting but exciting.
So you're in the rush hour that we talk about. You've got, yeah, the two kids, business, both of you working, having to have those conversations like, well, I've got a call at 8:30, so you're going to have to do that. Like, it's all that stuff that is, it's a massive change.
One thing about us is that we're very practical, and I think that's really helped us with parenting. We pre-plan a lot of stuff. So like we're going through so much in our head about like pushchairs, and we're quite far advanced. So I think when we get to it, it's already sorted.
Yeah.
And I think it goes the same for like our working weeks, weekends. We are trying to kind of be quite organized and practically minded about things.
Another benefit is you don't have the hormones thing going on that maybe, and I'm not saying I was completely irrational at times, but I was completely irrational.
I think that's a really good point that, you know, we are two men, so, and you know, that's trying to stereotype men or women differently. Mm. That, you know, men and women are wired differently, and the way that we approach Wilder and our kind of setup, I think it's often quite different to a lot of kind of other setups, and we make it work for us.
Have you faced any sort of discrimination or negative comment? Have you had any of that?
Not massively, you know, from a discrimination point of view. Occasionally you get the second look in the street. Right. More so in the UK than the US, if I'm honest. In the US, people just come over to us and just be like, this is incredible. Oh my God, you're so blessed. You're so wonderful. Wow, this is incredible.
How do you feel about that?
It doesn't bother me. I think it takes a lot for somebody to say it. The reason they're saying it for is because it doesn't look normal to them. So I'm hoping that by seeing us and speaking to us and saying nice things, it's just like, oh, people just want to talk to you in the US much more. So when we got back here, nobody really batted an eyelid and nobody really says anything to us. Not that I'm looking for it.
No, but in some ways, like I say, in the school, Mabel or Frank come home and they'll talk about so-and-so and they won't kind of go, they've got two dads. It's not a thing. They just see it.
It's great.
And so they will have such a different outlook to what I had growing up, where I didn't know anybody who had gay parents.
It just makes me smile when I speak to my friends like yourself, when they talk about their children, or I talk to my nieces and nephews and, you know, they talk about they and different sexualities. It's not just kind of gay, bisexual any longer. There's a whole host of terms, and it doesn't matter the setup, it matters about the person. And it just makes me feel so happy, you know, growing up in a Welsh valley town. I was severely bullied at school for being gay. You know, and it challenged me quite, you know, a lot all the way through my life, really. It was mostly a bit of a thing in my back of my head of like, how can I put a child through school with a gay dad? And now when I hear the comments from people that their children at school, it doesn't matter, they've got gay dads or lesbian mums or whatever it might be. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And then the other bit, I suppose it's discrimination. It's more people assume he's adopted.
Right.
So our neighbour stopped our nanny and said, isn't it strange that, you know, Wilder looks like one of them and he's adopted? And she's like, he's not adopted. It's biologically their child. You know, she couldn't get her head around that.
Right.
So there was that. And then the other time we flew back with Wilder once, we got stopped by immigration. And we've flown in three times with him. And particularly this time, it was my husband and I. The other time, I think I was on my own. They just let me through. So they basically asked to say, you know, whose son is this? And we said, it's ours. And I said, oh, I've got the paperwork here and here's his birth certificate. And we're on the birth certificate. And at the time, Wilder had his passport hadn't come through, but he had gone through the High Court in the UK to be legally British. And the guy was like, behind the counter, he was like, oh, this is really tricky and this is a really awkward situation. I said, why? I've come in four times in the last 12 months. And he was like, I need to go and speak to somebody. So off he went to speak to somebody. Somebody comes back and looks at us and starts asking all these random questions about neutralization. And I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about, mate. And I was like, he's our son and he was like, so he was like quite rude to us, and then he went off and they said, oh, you're gonna have to come over to a room. So it was like that kind of dreaded moment. And, you know, we just flown 10 hours on a flight back from the US.
With a baby.
And I was like, can I change my son's nappy? And they were a bit like, well, you can do it here. So I ended up changing his nappy on the floor in the middle of the terminal. They made us wait for ages. And then some super boss comes over and starts kind of saying some legal jargon. And I was like, I don't understand what the issue is. We've come in 3 times before. This is our son. He was like, well, because he's adopted, da, da, da. And I said, who said he's adopted? And he's like, oh, I thought you guys had adopted a child. He was like looking, saying like, how else would you have a baby? Right. And I said, sir, in all the greatest respect, you are holding a birth certificate on your hand. Mm-hmm. And it has my husband and my name on it. So how could he be adopted if he's got a birth certificate with our name on? And he was like, I think this just been a real big mistake here. And I can only apologize. I was like, yeah.
It shows how new, I suppose, it is to in lots of ways, because like the next time that happens, hopefully they wouldn't make the same mistake, right?
Hopefully.
I suppose you have to believe that it will change, because it is changing. It's just, I guess it's going to take time.
Yes, it is.
What do you think is the impact of celebrities having babies via surrogacy? Because I think that's probably where I've heard more about surrogacy, and probably more misinformation.
Kardashians.
Obviously the Kardashians, but more misinformation probably than anything.
Again, I think I always go back to, if it raises awareness of what surrogacy is out there, and it's an available tool to, you know, any couple or human or individual, sorry, that would like to go about having a child and they can do it in their own accord, then great.
It is raising awareness, I suppose, because they don't go into the detail and stuff, and maybe they shouldn't have to, but I suppose because they put so much of their lives out there,
yeah,
and then suddenly another baby appears and there's a mention of surrogacy, and then so it's this, that mystery bit.
I guess it's, when I looked at some of those situations, it's starting to feel like, if you're rich and famous and you don't really want to spend 9 months carrying a baby and you don't want to change your body, then go and have a surrogacy. You know, is that right or wrong?
Well, I suppose it lowers the value of it to someone, couple like yours.
It does. Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's a fine line.
How do people support people going through surrogacy?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. So hard, because we were in COVID.
We just kind of
got on with it. People were quite shocked, actually. Mm-hmm. There was a bit like, oh, really? Like, you know, they just assumed that, you know, we'd kind of gone past that point. You know, we were 38 and quite fun, outgoing people. So it's just been like, oh, you're having a baby. Like, you know, and I had a few friends just say, are you sure? Like, you know, and good friends do that. Yeah. You know, I think, you know, question like, you know, why? You know, why are you doing that? And I think that's mostly a good point. You know, challenge, you know, it's okay to be challenged by friends. Part of the reason why we wanted a baby as well was to change our life and change the direction of our life a little bit. I didn't kind of want to wake up at 50 on the dance floor of Pasha. To be honest, I would like to wake up at 50 on the dance floor of Pasha, but with nice, healthy children, you know, at home sleeping.
Being looked after by grandparents. Yeah. No, it's the clangers, I think, and just that nuance that people might not know of.
Yeah, I think that for that, with the adoption thing, was for me, that always kind of gets my back up.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, like, oh, it's so lovely you've adopted a child. You know, you just, they feel sorry for you, or like they feel like, oh,
yeah, such a good thing to do.
And somebody, it's good for you. Yeah. Like, oh, look at the gays having a baby and helping the world.
Oh. Like, yeah.
But I've got a thick skin.
And what about the impact of being a dad on your relationship?
Having a baby strengthened our relationship massively. We needed a challenge, we needed to shift our kind of lifestyle. Mm-hmm. It made us stronger because we had to work as a unit. Before, we were kind of just off doing our own thing, coming back together for holidays and date nights and, you know, daytimes. But
it's the fun stuff.
Yeah, the fun stuff. Yeah, this time it was like, God, we need to work. But we had this thing where it was the hug, you know, and it was, and we both had to kind of be mature and grown up about it. It was like, we need to give each other a hug.
Even though I don't like you very much, I'm going to give you a hug.
Even though I don't like you, but I know I need to give you a hug. Otherwise, you know, we're just going to keep procrastinating. Yeah. It's just going to keep going around our head. And we just do that nice solid hug for 2 minutes or a minute or so, and just be like, I love you. I do love you. Just remember that. It's okay.
I love that.
And we've never done that before.
We probably didn't need to, because you were too busy having loads of fun. A lovely time.
Yeah. So it strengthened us, and it's so wonderful to watch my husband with Wilder, and how he is and how loving he is, and, you know, their bond that they have and the funny things they do together. You know, it's just, I see him in such a different way now. You know, I'd see a different side to him, I guess, which is lovely.
The other thing I was going to ask you, so I've interviewed lots of women who've talked about feeling overwhelmed as well as that mum guilt, but do you feel that overwhelm, and what happens when you feel
it? I do. It goes through waves for me. I love being, I'm actually really good when I'm busy, but then there are moments, what I find is that my glass eventually gets half, not glass, sorry, my battery gets depleted. Yeah. Because you're continually on, you know, you're waking up in the morning, you're dealing with all the kind of pre-work bit, and then going to work, I mean, ta-da, and then coming home, bath, bed, chatting, and then you find yourself on the sofa ordering random stuff that you need for the baby, of like toys and gadgets and researching kind of pushchairs and car seats. For me, it's and in words for all of us, it's 7 days a week. Yeah. You know, you get to Saturday and you know, you do miss the lie-in, and I find that sometimes my battery gets low, and then I get a bit cranky, and then I feel a bit like, and then I'll go through a phase of that, and I think, no, okay, you need to pull yourself out of this, go for a run. Running became my saviour through the last 18 months. Going to the gym I used to love, but I just don't practically go into the gym any longer. It's so hard. You know, by the time you drive there or walk there or however you get there, and then you shower and do your gym and come back, sometimes like it's 2.5 hours out of your day. I'm like, I don't have 2.5 hours. Yeah, I do get that kind of that rush hour, but I'm trying to kind of keep an eye of when I can see it building up, and working out what I need to say no to. And it's sometimes thinking like, do you know what? No, I can't go to that event this week. Or actually, I need to go into work later. Or I need to make sure I finish at this time. It's identifying that before it becomes a problem and I start getting cranky.
I'm probably quite similar. And it gives you a buzz and you're like, oh, look, da da da. And then it's just the one thing too much because you say yes to too much. And then it all crashes. You're like, oh, yeah, no, I need to take some stuff out. I can't just keep going.
It's realized, and it's in hindsight we'd all do it more often, but I'm sure I'll keep doing it.
It's a cycle.
I'm trying to get better at it. I love like just doing things and like ticking things off my list. I've got lists for everything, you know, and like, right, let's get on with this, you know, and like I'm pre-booking flights ahead of time and pre-thinking about, you know, what do we need to do when this happens. So I'm always on. Wine definitely became my friend.
I know. And you're like, well, it's okay because it wasn't too much and all the time.
Sometimes you're like, we got through another day. Like it's 7 o'clock, baby's in bed, bath, bed, gym. Like,
I get why alcohol gets kind of demonized sometimes and people don't want to glorify it. But if you don't have a problem with booze, it's that distinction between day, busy, and then right, that's pausing that and having a drink to actually have a bit of time. I think that's okay.
It really is. It's a little ritual. Yeah, it's a ritual. It's just that like, like, you know, it's just as long as it's not, you don't become like a part-time alcoholic or function alcoholic.
The only thing I was going to mention that just really amused me at the time was your nightmare solo flight with Wilder.
Oh my gosh.
I've had bad flights, right? And we've had the chaos when there were three and one was a baby and the two. But man, oh man, it just was a catalogue of errors. It just sounded so bad.
It got so funny. I thought I was in like a sketch. I thought somebody might like jump out on me and be like, ha ha ha. It started, I thought it'd be, my husband was away working. I thought I'd go away with a friend. We went to a really nice hotel just in Spain. I thought it'd be really easy, lovely time. We did, we had a great time, but Wilder got sick from the pool, we think, or from the kids' club. So he just started throwing up. You know, it was the first time he'd ever been sick. I was like, you know, I went to his bed at midnight and it was just sick everywhere. And I just had no idea what to do. And I was like, shoot, whatever's happened. And then took him to the doctors. Doctor was like, I think he's teething. I was like, really? Gosh, okay. So they didn't really want to do anything. Yeah. My friend then realised he'd booked himself the wrong flight back. So he was no longer flying back with me. So I was now travelling on my own. So I got into the taxi and I was like, okay, we're going home. Like, breathe, get yourself sorted. And then I literally looked to the left and Wilder just like projectile vomited across this kind of lovely kind of hotel car. And just like, no. And we were in Spain, flying home from Gibraltar. And I'm sure some parents here have done this, but you have to kind of walk across the Gibraltar Strait where you go through passport control. So I get Wilder out of the car and I'm like cleaning the sick up from the car seat. But the guy like leaves me on the side of a dual carriageway because that's just where he drops you off. So I'm like stripping Wilder on this dual carriageway while like having cases and bags and stuff. So he basically goes through passport control in like nothing but a nappy. I get through and I kind of find something to change him into. And then it was like this whole walk. The airport was just a nightmare. Trying to go through an airport with a child on your own and try and put the pushchair down.
Yeah. Oh, it's God.
Like, you need two hands to do
the,
it.
Like passports and boarding passes. And
they want everything out of the pushchair, understandably for security, but it's like you're trying to get everything out of your pushchair and then they try to check the milk. So it was just a whole hoo-ha. And people are kind and people are lovely. You know, somebody offered to hold Wilder when I went through. I think I changed him again. And then we got, you know, trying to lug the thing down to the plane. And then I got on the plane and it was completely full. And I sat down and there was a delay on the tarmac for an hour.
Oh, for fuck's
sake. Wilder was just, by this point, he was just screaming. And I'd never seen him like this. He was just screaming and just being like, just not happy. Yeah. And the man next to me was some kind of like, not very parent friendly man who just kept like huffing and puffing. And I just sat there and thought, I don't know how I'm going to get through this flight, but I've just got to just take a deep breath.
I don't know why, but it really made me laugh when you wrote about having a coffee which got spilt and that you had a Kit Kat in your pocket melting or whatever. I just don't know why. Just like, you're just trying. It's like, I can do this. I can do this. Like,
yeah. I was like, I'll get a coffee and a Kit Kat and I put it down on the seat. And then all of a sudden the seat just rocked and the coffee went all over me. And I was like, I'll have my Kit Kat, as you quite rightly said. I forgot about that. And I pulled the Kit Kat and it like melted on my linen shirt in the pocket. And I was just like, okay, yeah, great. And he finally did sleep a bit on the plane and then woke up and then had some more sick. And then by the time I got to Heathrow, I was like, God, I'm on the home straight now. This is brilliant. Yeah. Like, great. Got the bag, got into the car. And we don't live far from the airport. And I was feeling quite like smug by this point. Like, God, like nothing else can take it all now. Just as I thought that, while I was sat on my lap and just had a nappy on, and he just pooed and it was diarrhea. And it came out like a Little Britain sketch where it just like projectile down my leg and like through my kind of like flip flop. And I just was like,
oh, God.
And I just thought, right, Jonathan, think practical right now. You really got to sort this out. So I just kind of, I wound the window down and I kind of like went through the bag that was at the side of me and I just got my own clothes out and started to wipe in my leg. And I wiped the floor and I just flipped the mat over on the taxi floor. And I just said to the guy, I said, oh, I'm really sorry, my son's blown off. And he was like, oh, don't worry. It's okay.
Oh, man,
that
could still be there.
It could still be there. And I literally just like jumped up, ran out of the car and just kind of run into the house.
But also, I feel like everyone has to have that, whether it's in a car, like I've got a picture somewhere where two of my kids were sick at the same time, simultaneously with one in the middle not being on like a nightmare car journey. Like it has to happen. It's your initiation.
It does.
And he's done it now.
It's part of parenting, isn't it?
And he's going to be coming over to America with you really soon.
He's coming with us. Yeah, he totally is.
Meet his dear baby.
Meet his brother. And I'm really excited for him to see his surrogate. We have such a great relationship with our surrogate. And we caught up with her in January. I think there's a lot of nervousness sometimes with the surrogate that they're going to get too attached to a child. And, you know, from our experience, it really hasn't. You know, Stephanie is very practical. And, you know, to her, she was carrying a baby for us and it was part of what she wanted to do to give back. We're excited to get back and we're very close with the family and she's got three boys herself. And I know that Wilder's now older and I think he's going to love kind of seeing three older kind of kids running around.
Awesome.
Yeah, just got to get there.
You're nearly there. I'm really excited for you and it will be okay. I think fear is worse than the actual. I was so nervous having my second and then you're just doing it, aren't you? And it sounds as if the two of you are working well together, so you'll be fine.
But is the nervousness good? Because it means you're thinking about it and digesting it and working out.
Well, you give a shit.
Yeah.
Well, also, if you were just like, oh, yeah, I'll be fine, because they're supposed to danger you. Oh, I've done this before. It's going to be totally fine. Then you might not have thought through any of it or had the conversations or just said, I feel a bit nervous about that. And then your expectations could be too high. I think everything with kids is about keeping expectations quite low. And then it's always a pleasant surprise when it's all right.
This is true. And you've got three. I don't know how you do that.
My first two were 21 months apart, so not too dissimilar to your 18 months. And it was
full on.
But now they are close in age and they do lots of things at the same time and they either fight or they get on very well. But when they're left to their own devices, they get on really well.
That was part of the reason why we were just, let's keep it quite close to each other, because they, when they get to five and six or even later, they will, they'll be such more, hopefully really close buddies and they'll only be a year apart in school. So that was, you know, rip the band-aid off now for later.
Yeah.
Because we're in having two. There's no more.
Right. Okay.
Is that what you said? Sense.
No, I want, well, I had a bigger gap, but I want another, and Doug kept swinging between, oh, it's a terrible idea, and oh, maybe, and then meanwhile I got pregnant, and then we had a third, but we did have a bigger gap, and there's something to be said for the big gap as well, but I think if you have two close together, that also works. It all works. It's going to be just fine. Yeah.
It will be. It's always fine in the long run, I always think. So
yeah, thank you so much. Well,
thank you. You broke my podcast cherry.
Massive thank you to Jonathan, and good luck with baby two. I hope they manage to recreate that bubble he talked about, even though the world has opened up. I also thought what he said about sharing 50-50 and not having preconceived ideas of their roles was really interesting. Producer Fee and I came away from the recording saying, right, so we need to be gay men, basically. Please get in touch if you want to share any thoughts. It's always good to hear from people, as I said. And thank you so much for listening. Have a really good week. We've got bank holidays coming up here in the UK, so I hope it's a good one.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.